to the second half of this amazing night. Let's clap again for all the people we just heard. I'm going to tell you about this flute. So it was made by Hawk Henrys, who lives in Maine now, but he grew up as a Nipmuc person in Central Mass. And every year, I am in Franklin County, and Great Falls is where there's now a Pocumtuck Homelands Festival, which is incredible, because 400 years ago, right in that spot, was the massacre of 300 people. So, such an example of transformation. And Hawk comes every year. The first year he was there, there was a rainbow in the sky. So, I love to take his flute down to the Pocumpatuck River, which is now called the Deerfield. That's where I live. And just sometimes I try to play like the clouds, play at the mountains, play like the water. So I wrote this song for today. Pocumtuck Homelands Festival, the president of Nolambika, David Brewer, speaks. And David is one of three men who started the Nolambika as a force to tell the true stories of Native people. So he began to talk about the Native names for the rivers. So let me say one and you guess. Quinnectacook. Connecticut. And, well, Agawam. But what about Warrenoko? Yeah. That's the Westfield. Oh, isn't that so amazing? So it turns out that for Native people, it meant turning about. That's what Warrenoko means. I'm not sure where you can feel that in the river. Maybe you'll have a sense of the winding quality, but that's what Warrenoko means. So they were the Warrenoko people. Agawam. The Agawam meant fishing station, fish curing place, resort for the fish of passage, all kinds of different meanings. But I got so interested in trying to sing a song, so I wrote this song this week about the Warrenoko. And Bill Staines, yay Sarah, thank you for singing the river song. He also wrote a song called So Sang the River. What I did was take that phrase and then that first melody, but make up the rest to be about the Warrenoko and the Westfield. You know, I'd love to teach you the chorus. Maybe it'd be easier if I said it first. It's gonna be, so sang the river as the waters crested near. Reach for my old name and remember who was here. I'll sing it and then I'll teach it a bit at a time.
So Sarah Pirtle, everybody. Sarah. All right, Mr. Josh Wachtel is coming up.
I'm gonna stand. I don't know. I'm gonna sing this first one a cappella. I don't know. Do I need that? I don't know if I need it.
Joe, hang back from it. He's recording. He's being recorded.
Oh, we're recording? Cool. I learned this song from Claudia Schmidt on a mixtape that a very dear friend of mine sent me when I needed it most. You Can't Stop Running Water was the title of the mixtape. It's a heavy song, but I don't know. I felt it today. And I feel it. I feel it. It's a hard time. Are you okay?
Yes.
Okay. It's really a hard time, I'm telling you. Things are happening to everybody. All right. So this, yeah, Claudia Schmidt, I think she wrote it, and it's called River of Sorrows. I did come upon a river of tears, the grief of my sisters and brothers. It had grown so deep, I could not cross over to continue on my journey. It was wild and black, and it threw out a spray that stained my garments blood red. I was filled with fear, I was filled with pain, and I thought I would never cross over. I did build a raft from the bones of my mother, who had drowned in that river of sorrow. And I did bind those bones, oh, one to another, with the ropes of the captives now freed. And I did steer that raft from a long straight branch from a tree that my father had planted. And I set out into that treacherous flow with a trembling hope in my heart. And as I crossed that angry stream, I looked in the waters all swirling, and it showed me the faces of the ones I had killed by refusing to fight for their freedom. And it showed me the faces, the ones who had died while trying to end the struggles. And their voices cried out, get to the shore and continue the work we've begun. And the water it dragged, and the water it pulled, and the pain it threatened to drown me. But I held my course, bore down on that pole from the tree that my father had left me. And I fell exhausted onto the shore as the raft splintered all into pieces. Then a smile came to my weary face, and I heard those voices singing. Songs like tears, songs like rivers, I've carried them all on my journey. And it's these I'll sing until that river runs as dry as the bones of my mother. And it's these I'll sing until that river's but a valley where sorrows won't rage. Yeah. Well, when Katie and I started dating, the last book came out by my favorite author, Peter Kingsley. And we bought it and read it together out loud, which was lovely. It was kind of a memoir. And then, for my birthday, she bought me the one Peter Kingsley book I didn't have. And that was really great. And in there, he talks about a lot about Greek mythology, and he has a big section about underground river. Underground river. So I got thinking about that a lot. And I think somebody said, we don't know where the rivers come from. They do come from underground. I see where they come from on our land, where there's springs. And so this song's a love song for Katie, Underground River. And it's for our Waranoco too, and for all our rivers. All rivers are one.
River and underground river.
fast. It's going to be good tomorrow, too.
All right. Josh Wachtel. All right. Which brings us to our good friend, Mr. Stephen Fulbrook.
Oh, yeah. Yes, please. Well, John makes this possible for me. I want to thank all the musicians, truly. All your music was uplifting and soothing. And I thought maybe the audience would like a break. So we're going to have a poem instead. And the poem is set on Pettengill Field. That's the Covington ball field down by the river. And I don't know if the person I'm about to talk about remembers this, but just to introduce it, I'd like to say many years ago, the Hilltown Junior Olympics was in Covington that year. And they asked me, my day job is I'm a minister, they asked me to say an invocation or a blessing for the kids' Olympics. And as is so often the case, I eagerly said yes. And then later, what do you say? Well, we got down there and I looked around and I just told the kids, everybody comes from somewhere, but you come from a real place. Look at, here's this field where you're going to run and jump and get timed and do all these track and field events. It's a ball field, and look what is the left field fence. You look out there in the late summer, and it's the house's cornfield. It's a real green monster. How many of you speak baseball?
Oh, I'm a green monster.
Yeah, you're with me. So that's what I did, and that was all fine. And then at the end, a young man came up to me and said, oh, I never heard anything like that. You know, I said, what do you do? I'm the minister in West Covington. Not too long after, he showed up on a Sunday to see what it was like. And he brought his wife as a chaperone, and he kept coming back, and they began singing, and they chose a nifty name for their group, and it may be one part luck. It's also one part of West Covington, dude. Thank you. Thank you. Well, so this is a poem that takes place at that ball field, and what do you need to know? I guess I come from a baseball family, and my kids were teenagers at the time of this poem. And there is a character in this poem called Mr. Macy. And all names have been changed to protect the innocent. But Mr. Macy was somebody I barely knew. I think he was a school teacher. And he just sort of randomly appeared in that empty place down by the river in the ball field. I never did find out why. Okay, the name of this is Batting Practice. The boys and I, on our hometown ball field, with Trudge's corn crop for the left field fence. The monster was green and rustled in the late summer as it dried toward silage and its great loud fall. It was bounded down the left field line by the river, downstream from the cow barn and the milk house. So this was my kids and a couple of their friends, old enough now to swing a bat and make some noise. Mr. Macy stopped by and watched. He looked uncomfortable. Well, when all the kids were done, it was a little late, it was a little chill, and I was just thinking I'd like to take a couple of cuts myself, you know, before it got dark. When Mr. Macy said, "Could I hit a few?" Not understanding the question, we said, "Sure," instead of, "I don't know." Well, I lobbed them in, and I was aiming for the diamond in the chain link backstop. There's one diamond that if you aim for that and hit that, comes right over the middle of the plate. And I was lobbing them in, aiming for that diamond that gave you down the middle and belt high. Mr. Macy swept the bat across the plate as though his wrists would break if he broke his wrists. Not all of you speak baseball. But he missed and missed and missed again. Always late, always past, always late. Somebody, one of the kids, mentioned that. And so Mr. Macy swang the next time before I let it go. It wasn't working. The boys barked encouragement the way dogs would to a rabbit. They just wanted to chase around the outfield. They just wanted to pounce upon the infield. Glasses off, glasses on, off again. His tweed jacket beginning to orbit around his rounded shoulders. Mr. Macy was wearing himself out. And my shoulder was beginning to grab a little bit. Frank, one of my sons, could throw a strike by then. I got him to take a turn. Hit his bat. He always swings waist high and late. No kidding, Dad. Mr. M mistook my hint for strategy. And he began to vary his swings. High, low, slow, or real slow. He repeated like pie. Until finally, it was just worse to keep trying. No one knew how to say it. No wafers of mercy for anyone's dry tongue. The kids were cast down. Frank was red with sympathetic shame, and Macy with defeat. He leaned the bat against the backstop, knob down. Bizarrely, it bounced. Then he put his glasses on, adjusted his jacket, folded his arms, lowered his eyes, and slowly walked toward his car, parked in the dust by the tilting telephone pole. I couldn't stand it. Grabbing the bat, I demanded, "Just one." Frank shrugged and threw first pitch right down the dick. Out along the left field line, over the cow's tail of cornfield, flicked toward the river, over the bank and into the middle of the current, bound away from paradise toward bigger rivers and the dirty sound. All the boys raised their fists, gloves crunched, and froze. There, Mr. Macy stood in front of his car,
oh dear,
like a statue to something, looking out beyond the fields and the river to wherever he had come. All was wrong with the world. in an agony of things to say, no one said anything. I put down the bat, asshole. Yeah, but it was a clout! Well, as Lead Belly says, this story has no moral. This story has no end. This story just goes to show that there ain't no good in men. And precious little in boys. Thank you.
Christopoulos is next up.
You gotta plug it in.
You're gonna sit, right?
Yeah. Where's your little cable that was kicking around? Okay, here it is. Here. That's yours, okay.
Yep.
Steve, that was perfect. Thank you. That really, perfect, man. This is, I probably do over 100 gigs a year as a mercenary bass player. Half the time I don't even know who I'm playing for.
Or with.
And this is not that, you know. I've said this before, this is my favorite place to play music. And it's because of you guys. It's because of you and Peg. And, you know, if you're a mercenary musician, it's not always the most fun, you know, sometimes it's really kind of a drag, some of these places you show up at, you don't know what's going on or whatever, but that's not what this is, and I love doing this because I get to sing songs, which is not what I usually do, and I also really love an assignment, so I've written two songs for you, and one is fiction, and one is nonfiction. And I think I'll start with the fiction one first. But I have to find it because I just wrote it and I don't remember it. So let me just find it and I will play it. All right, we're almost there.
How are we gonna know which one is fiction?
I'm gonna tell you. You have to bear with my technological limitations here.
No.
I'm gonna tell you, don't just take it easy, Sylvia. I'm gonna tell you. But I have to find it. And I'm not the most savvy tech guy. Okay. All right. So yeah, this is the story that I made up. And you know, it's kind of like a conversation between me and and somebody that I meet at the river. I live on the Swift River, about 6 miles from here. And I grew up near the Housatonic with lots of PCBs. Story. And similar to Tim's story, I have to find it. A little over 150 years ago, we had a flood. the Williamsburg flood. And it's a story, it's a tragedy, and some things never change. Flood.
one more act, one more bit of music for our River Songs, adventure here. Sean Kimball and Heather Kupo are coming up. You guys can sit or stand.
Part in my life. When I was 10 years old, the mighty Susquehanna River overflowed its banks and flowed in through my bedroom window and washed my entire city away. It was pretty exciting. And then there was the...
Agnes.
Yeah, it was Agnes, and then I moved to the Schuylkill River, and then baked bread by the Housatonic River, and now we live on the tributaries to the Westfield River, which is the Warrenoak River. Yeah. So there's a lot of rivers in my life. Neither of these songs are about any of those.
But you can imagine.
Oh,
anybody recognize that song? It's from a movie. A movie theme.
The Birds.
Yeah, it's from Easy Rider, Ballad of Easy Rider. So get on your bike and take a ride. Watch out for the guys in the truck. You have to forgive me, I'm kind of getting over a cold and now I'm blanking on the song that we're doing.
You start it, so.
Thank you. I'm just flashing back to every cafe show I've ever done. It's like, where am I? In so many ways, I'm the same as you. Better left unsaid.
stories they told.
That's A Life Between Us by Neil Finn.
By who?
Neil Finn.
Neil Finn, the Finn Brothers.
Oh. All right. That's it, y'all. Thanks for coming out. Friday Night Cafe. We love you. Come back.